to the Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, a welcoming and diverse community whose vision it is to contribute to a world that works for everyone. The inspirational message you are about to hear will expand your idea of what is possible in life right now and affirm your soul's knowing in taking that right next step towards your greatest good.
Well, good morning, Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, and all of you who might be listening from far and wide. I welcome you to this new day. As Julia said, we're beginning to explore this new theme, creativity and abundance. Now, the Centers for Spiritual Living theme is creativity. However, if you can't have one without the other, at least not in spiritual truth anyways. You know, when we look at the relevance of this spiritual truth in our lives, we might perceive it differently, however, but it is in that very perception that the spiritual truth of where there is creativity, there is abundance, is unwavering. The limitlessness of infinite creative intelligence is ongoing in its full state of self-givingness, no matter our subjective perceptions, observations, desires, or even outcomes. It is here, as Howard Thurman says, keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve, that we break new ground. The object of all life is development, and everything that lives has an inalienable right to all the development it is capable of attaining. Wouldn't you agree? Dr. Wallace Wattles, a 19th century author, in his book, The Science of Getting Rich, states this. He says there are three motives for which we live. We live for the body, we live for the mind, and we live for the soul. No one of these is better or holier than the other. All are alike, desirable, and no one of the three, the body, the mind, or the soul, can live fully if either of the others is cut short of full life and expression. It is not right or noble to live only for the soul and deny mind or body. And it is wrong to live for the intellect and deny body or soul. Each of us naturally wants to become all that we are capable of becoming. And this desire to realize innate possibilities is inherent in human nature. We cannot help wanting to be all that we can be. So to be really rich does not mean to be satisfied or content with a little, does it? No. Success in life is becoming what you want to be. We have a right to be rich and to live richly. And when we work with the universal creative process consciously and intelligently, we demonstrate exactly that. When we understand the truth about universal substance, which is infinite in its existence and potential for expression, we are free to exercise a generosity not yet known to us. And it is from this state of being that we are centered in our wholeness and can overcome world conditions. It is in the practice of generosity, both an art and a science, in which we learn to master the law of giving and receiving, affirming and attracting a prosperous life. One of my favorite authors on the topic of abundance and prosperity is Eric Butterworth. He was a 20th century Unity minister and author. And he wrote in his brilliant text, Spiritual Economics, this most appropriate metaphor. He says, when you walk on a beach and pick up a pebble and hold it close to your eye, you see the variant colors. The rock looms so large, it obstructs your view of everything else. And this is what happens when we constantly reinforce that there isn't enough, that we are not enough, and that we have not within us the capacity nor the power for change. But if we take that pebble and hold it at proper viewing distance, it can be examined and properly dealt with. Drop it at our feet, and it can become part of a path made from stepping stones. I love that metaphor. You know, all things work together for good is a principle, the effect of which is that any experience of life can become the best thing that ever happened to us. I know that every one of us relates to this, for we have all said too many times to count, I was certainly upset about that challenge, but now I see it in retrospect. It was the best possible thing that could have happened. Why do we wait for retrospect? The power in each thought can only be activated in the moment of our awareness of the thought. So why not accept the possibility right when the challenge occurs? Easy for you to say, Nadine, I know. You know, we're the only ones that can reverse adversity in our experience. And a most efficient beginning, I think I'd like to say, is by remembering who we truly are. So I want to share with you the story of creation by Dr. Ernest Holmes to do just that. Dr. Holmes says God's supreme intelligence was conscious of itself and desired to manifest in form through its word, which was the law of its being. God could not speak a word which contradicts its own nature. It is its nature to create, but being all, it must create within itself. Since reality is born within our minds, we must create from within. The word of God spoken within itself set the law within itself in motion. The result is creation. The word is the mold. God made each person in its own image with its full nature, the desire to create and the ability to do so. God gave all people free will and dominion over their own state of mind and being. So you see, spirit has a much bigger idea for you than you have been thinking about. You know, as we enter into this bigger question of who and whose we truly are, we break the former ground of our understanding and enter into more of the quantum field of possibility, naturally drawing more into our experience. Now, breaking ground, I know we've all seen the images of that tiny little seedling breaking through concrete, right? It's such a beautiful, beautiful remembrance and picture of possibility. I know it seems often like it would be a tough nut to crack, you know? So I want to share a couple of key elements as to how to break ground and become a cheerfully expectant co-creator of our abundance. So the first of which I'd like to explore is the law of giving and receiving. The definition by which begins, the universe operates through dynamic exchange. Giving and receiving are different aspects of the flow of energy in the universe. And in our willingness to give that which we seek, we keep the abundance of the universe circulating in our lives. Now, if we stop the flow of our energy moving forward, we actually interfere with nature's intelligence. We must give and receive in order to keep money or anything we want circulating in our lives. So here are some ways to activate this law. Say to yourself, wherever I go and whomever I encounter, I will bring them a gift. Now the gift may be a compliment, it may be a flower or a prayer. And this begins the process of circulating joy, wealth, and affluence in our lives and in the lives of others. Another thing you can do is say, I gratefully receive all the gifts that life has to offer me, such as the gift of nature, sunlight, the sound of birds, singing, spring showers, workers breaking through concrete at 6 in the morning, or the first snow of winter, all of it. I will also be open to receiving from others, whether it be in the form of a material gift, money. How easy is that to receive? A compliment or a prayer? Make a commitment to keep wealth circulating in your life by giving and receiving life's most precious gifts. The gift of affection, the gift of appreciation, of caring, and of love. Even the gift of your own vulnerability. And each time you meet someone, just silently know for them happiness, joy, and laughter. You know, currency, our word for money, derives from a Latin word meaning to run or flow. Now, money is a symbol of the life energy we give and the life energy we receive as a result of the service we provide to others. And like a river, money must keep flowing. Otherwise, it becomes or begins to clog and stagnate. Circulation keeps it alive and vital. And if we stop the circulation of energy, if our intention is to hold on to our money and hoard it, we stop its circulation back into our lives. So the intention behind our giving and receiving is the most important thing. Wouldn't you agree? When the act of giving is joyful, when it is unconditional and from the heart, then the energy behind the giving increases many times over. But if we give grudgingly, there is no energy behind the giving. If we feel we have lost something through the act of giving, then the gift is not truly given and will not cause increase. The law of giving and receiving with respect to creating abundance is simple. If you want material affluence, help others to become materially affluent. If you want to be blessed with all the good things in life, learn to silently bless everyone with all good things in life. The more you give, the more you receive. I want to stop here for a moment and say, as an extension of that idea, and the more we consciously make the space to practice receiving by blessing ourselves in divine light and love, we never feel depleted. It is in our willingness to give out that which we seek, really, that will keep the abundance of the universe circulating in our lives. And above all, to align with the law of giving and receiving, we must remember that even though abundance has material expression, what is really circulating is consciousness. Even the thought of giving, the thought of blessing, or a simple prayer has the power to affect others. We're bundles of thought in a thinking universe, and thought has power to transform. So take a breath, and I'm going to share with you the second key element I believe, in my experience, helps us to break new ground in this area of creativity and abundance, or creating abundance. It's the law of detachment. Now, the law of detachment is commonly known as releasing what no longer serves us by limiting our belief and experience of who we are and what is possible for us to become and create. But the spiritual law of detachment states that in order to manifest our desires, we must release attachment to the outcome itself as well as the path we might take to get there. So if we are releasing what has gone before and what is yet to be, then we are practicing, really, the Hindu view of detachment, the understanding of the nature of existence and the true ultimate state of being, which is sought by being in present moment awareness. In other words, while one is responsible and active in the present moment, we don't worry about past or future. And once we release our attachment to an outcome, it doesn't mean that we're any less interested in manifesting that goal. It simply means that we're less interested in the fear of not achieving it. I'm going to repeat that. Once we release the attachment to an outcome, it doesn't mean that we are less interested in manifesting that goal. It simply means that we're less interested in the fear of not achieving it. We've shifted our attention away from fear because we feel safe. We might have an easy time convincing ourselves to detach intellectually from how we want things to go, right? But isn't letting go emotionally a different story altogether? I've really grappled with that, you know, because I'm always not in touch with my emotions. I am headstrong. And I'm always running questions, answers, suppositions, assumptions, possibilities in all areas of my life. So when I get to that place of going, oh, I have it all organized. It's working fine. I know exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. I know how the laws work. You know, I'm living in principle, yada, yada, yada. And then I go, oh, but I have some deeper attachment to this, right? It's an emotional attachment. So how do we let go emotionally our attachments? How do we release our grip and give the goals the freedom they need to flourish? Well, for me, the first step is compassion. To be compassionate for the part of me that is attached to the outcome. Now, it's very tempting to imagine that all of us is attached to a specific outcome, but the truth is that there's really only a part of us that is attached to the outcome. Now, it may seem like a very big part, but that's because, you know, we've probably been focusing a lot of our energy on either resisting it or trying to get rid of it. Unfortunately, the more aggressively we approach this part of us, the more entrenched it gets in its position. So the harder I try to release my emotional attachment, the more it sticks with me. So rather than trying to get rid of it, I've found that I just give it loving care. You know, I mean, if I'm attached to something, it usually indicates there's some part of me in fear or some part of me scared. And I think that needs our compassion more than anything. You know, so sometimes I see myself as a small child and I imagine treating myself with kindness and just comfort, you know, a reassurance. And I allow my mind to soften around this issue. And so then whenever I get scared in the future or I'm holding on or grasping something, I just continue to provide and call in compassion and care for this part of me that obviously feels overwhelmed, right? And I also remember there's this core part of us, this divine wisdom, this higher self, this source, that within us that knows it knows that all is well. And I allow this core part to take the lead in my life. The second thing I do to help release emotional attachment to outcome is that I keep all options on the table. You know, nothing triggers attachment to an outcome like the feeling of scarcity. So whether you're worried about running out of opportunities or time, scarcity is a fear-based mindset that can wreak havoc on our goals. Feelings of scarcity can lead to impulsive actions and unhealthy preoccupation with things you don't have. So in order to reduce feelings of scarcity, keep all options on the table, even the options that aren't exactly your favorites right now. Don't discard possible solutions too soon. And most importantly, and I am so guilty of this one, don't fall in love with an option prematurely. Don't fantasize about how your life will look once you obtain that one option, but rather, the feeling experience of your desire for a fuller life, right? Be specific about the feeling, desire, and expression and experience rather than honing in on the one specific mental picture that will produce it. Be as neutral as you can. Stay open to unexpected opportunities and try not to idealize or force any particular solution. When we're attached to an outcome, we tend to fixate on only one possible solution. And what that does, it excludes any new information, ideas, and opportunities. And the last thing is ask for more. Ask for more. Now, while it may sound counterintuitive to ask for more when you're concerned about manifesting just one thing, it's surprisingly effective as a strategy. So here's an example. If you want to have one new job, picture having three good offers to choose from. If you're looking for a romantic partner, imagine having two amazing people who are interested in you. Or if you want to buy a dream home, for me, a second home in Mexico would be just wonderful. Picture yourself with a dream home and a vacation home, and perhaps another retreat in a third location. You see, as we learn to release our emotional attachments, we more naturally cultivate a generous perspective and become a conduit for abundance in our own world. And this perspective asks us to know through our daily demonstration this: I am enough, therefore there is enough, and therefore you are enough, and what is enough. A generous perspective in turn cultivates a generous heart. And in the Buddhist tradition, one small act of charity is said to be equal to countless acts of charity. On reflecting upon Dana Paramita, which means one small act of charity, we are made aware that it requires three kinds of purity. This means that true giving involves the awareness that there is no giver, no gift, and no receiver. True giving involves the awareness that there is no giver, no gift, and no receiver. So attachments of any kind, whether it be to self as the benefactor, the value of the gift, or to the acknowledgement by the receiver, nullify the pure act of giving and can cost us the powerful experience found living in harmony with that beautiful rhythm of life, that law of circulation. As this brings me to the final key element in breaking ground into the experience of abundance and prosperity, it is living in harmony with the rhythm of life, the full-on, unlimited self-givingness of God in, through, and as its creation. We need to create a rhythm that builds up our energy exchange with life, not depletes it. It is already within us to give, so begin. Whatever practice you need to support the flowing out of the rhythm of life. One such practice is learning to live in questions, which we know brings us to that place of entering the mystery or uncertainty. But as much as it might feel scary at times, it also comes with a feeling of freedom, right? All options, all possibilities. Here's a very quick story. A student once asked a Hindu teacher, trying to stump him, "Don't you know for sure at least that you are a human being?" To which the teacher replies, "In part." Such a simple statement reflecting that our elder teachers believe that not to know is to step into life without repeating ourselves. This perhaps is how we live into the rhythm of life and the flow of circulation. Not to know allows us to forget the prejudices, the comparisons that say, I am richer than you, I am poorer than you, I am good at this or bad at this. If we practice don't know mind for long enough, perhaps we can learn how to be good at anything. Now, while emptiness is what is left when you take away the thoughts and beliefs that we have constructed around the emotions of attachment, no knowing is a way to move in the absence of such thoughts. It is the space between the notes where creativity and abundance meet in our relative experience of limitlessness. Now, on the topic of the power of being in harmony with the rhythm, this creatively abundant life, Rainer Marie Rilke, who is an acclaimed Austrian poet, was said to give this advice to a younger poet. He said, I would like to beg you, dear sir, to have patience with everything unresolved in your heart, and to try to love the questions themselves as if they were locked rooms or books written in a very foreign language. Don't search for the answers, which could not be given to you now, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps then, someday in far future, you will gradually, without even noticing it, live your way into the answer. And I would like to close today with one of Rilke's most loved poems entitled, I am much too alone in this world, yet not alone. He writes, I am much too alone in this world, yet not alone enough to truly consecrate the hour. I am much too small in this world, yet not small enough to be to you just object and thing, dark and smart. I want my free will and want it accompanying the path which leads to action, and want during times that beg questions where something is up to be among those in the know, or else be alone. I want to mirror your image to its fullest perfection, never be blind or too old to uphold your weighty, wavering reflection. I want to unfold. Nowhere I wish to stay crooked bent, for there I would be dishonest, untrue. I want my conscience to be true before you. My friends, breaking new ground is the natural state of creative evolution. Within every one of our experiences exists a different perspective on a new reality, and access to life's limitless creative power for a rich and prosperous life. And so it is.
Thank you for listening. If you have received a value, we invite you to share this podcast and check out our website, columbiacsl.com, to sign up for our weekly newsletter, providing thought-provoking blogs, and details on our upcoming classes and community events. And we always are pleased to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@columbiacsl.com. Thank you. Blessings on your journey.